from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of CBS Sports Radio here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to a Wednesday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all of our great local CBS Sports Radio affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 158, and that free Odyssey app. 855-212-4CBS is the number to jump on in, 855-212-4227. And you could always get at me on Instagram, where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. Jared Greenberg, who did the sideline reporting last night for the Knicks' victory up against the Miami Heat, he will be stopping by at the top of the hour. And then at 9:20 p.m. Eastern, 6:20 p.m. Pacific, a man that covers the Lakers, Trevor Lane, will be joining us after what was a great game one between Steph Curry's Golden State Warriors and LeBron James's Los Angeles Lakers, and a big part of it, Anthony Davis, why the Lakers are able to take game one in the Bay Area, and they're able to go into the Chase Center and walk out victorious. We'll talk about that right out of the gate, but first up, producing this extravaganza for the next 4 hours is no other than Hot Take Kiki.
Hot Take Kiki.
So everyone's discussing today the Jordan Poole shot at the end of the game. And I think a lot of people are letting their feelings of how we wanted that game to end get in the way of logic. Because when I'm watching that game last night and you have the Warriors going on that 14-0 run down the stretch, it looked like they were down and out in the game. The Lakers were going to easily take game one. And the next thing you know, we have a tie game. And then shortly after that, the Lakers are up by three. We're all sitting on the edges of our seats. And we're waiting to see Steph Curry square up and take a three-point shot to go tie the game. That's what we were hoping for with the Lakers up 115-112. You wanted to see Steph square up and see if he was going to make the shot or miss the shot. And I give credit to Stan Van Gundy because I thought he was great in the broadcast last night. He said it's the ABC play for the Lakers on defense. Anybody but Curry. That was a wonderful line. And right away, I got to give credit to Lakers defense. They had two guys on Steph Curry, so he couldn't find his way to get closer to the three-point line. He passes the ball to Draymond Green. Draymond then throws the rock to Jordan Poole, who is so far behind the three-point line. Like, it is ridiculous range, but prior to that, Jordan Poole was 6-10 from long distance in the game, and he takes the shot and misses it. And right away, because of how long the shot was, and it wasn't Steph Curry, every Tom, Dick, and Harry today is yelling how it was the wrong decision by Jordan Poole. I vehemently disagree. Jordan Poole had to take that shot. Now, you could argue Jordan Poole could have got closer to the basket. Jordan Poole should have been closer to the basket. And I totally hear you, and I got nothing for you. But when he gets that ball and he starts to square up, and you could go back and watch the replay with about 10.7, 10.6 seconds left, Steph is still standing right at half court. If Steph was cutting to a three-point area to go square up for a shot, it's a different story. But I don't know what else Jordan Poole, other than just being closer to the basket, in that scenario, is supposed to do. So I don't have a big-time problem, and I'm not irate about the Jordan Poole shot, and it didn't go in. The guy was 6-10 before that shot, and he had a wide-open look. And what have we praised? And I know it's been with Steph and Klay Thompson throughout the years, but what have we praised the Golden State Warriors for years? How they make three-point shots so deep, and so many times, even when we know they're going to be dominant, they still make your jaw hit the floor. So I don't understand why people are incensed today and they're clowning Jordan Poole and they're saying he made the wrong decision. What else, other than moving closer to the three-point line, was he supposed to do? But this happens all the time in sports. whenever you don't have the guy take the shot, you always criticize the guy for either passing the ball or saying to the team, how didn't you get the ball into the hands of the guy who was supposed to hit the shot? And I get it. There was about 10.5 seconds left when he releases. That's an eternity. But I don't know if Steph was going to be able to get into position to not only get the ball, but then also release the shot as well. Because once again, with 10.6, 10.7 seconds remaining, he's standing still at half court. So he has to then break away from a defender, get the ball, square up to shoot, and probably Jordan Poole's going to have to make the pass in some sort of traffic. So zero problem other than the distance with him taking the shot last night. And when he gets the ball there and he doesn't elect to take a dribble or two to get closer to the three-point line, he has to shoot in that spot. And that's what the Warriors are. We have praised them for years for making those shots. So I'm not going to sit here in this moment and rip Jordan Poole for last night. Now, going into this series, I like the Golden State Warriors. I like the Golden State Warriors in seven games. I'm still picking Golden State, but we have to tip the cap to Anthony Davis. Because Anthony Davis, if the Lakers are going to win this series, and you don't need a PhD in basketball to figure this one out, he is going to have to be the most valuable player for the Los Angeles Lakers. And what Anthony Davis did last night was absolutely dominant. That's the Anthony Davis that the Los Angeles Lakers traded for when he goes for 30 points and 23 rebounds. And it's kind of funny because we know Anthony Davis isn't their best player. But Anthony Davis, if they want to go win a championship, is their most valuable player. And I said the same thing a few years ago when they were in the bubble. Because this league now is a dynamic duo league for the most part. And we know what LeBron's going to do. And LeBron could play better. But you need that second running mate to be dominant. And last night, Anthony Davis was dominant. It's like the same thing with the Sixers. The same thing with the Nuggets. A little bit different. But we all know Joel Embiid. He's the MVP of the league. He's the Sixers' best player. But if the Sixers want to get to a championship, their most valuable player is going to have to be James Harden because James Harden is going to have to hit big shots late in games. You look at the Nuggets, the guy that's won back-to-back MVPs and this year finished runner-up, Nikola Jokic. He's clearly their best player. Yes, there's a game like game two where Joker goes off and Jamal Murray didn't do much. But if the Nuggets want to go win a championship, they need Jamal Murray to be their most valuable player because he's been, in the past, a great finisher. So last night, AD came to play. It's good to see because for the last few years, the injuries have been right at the forefront. And if AD could give you, not necessarily 23 rebounds and 30 points three more times, but if he could give you great efforts like that three more times in this series, then yeah, the Los Angeles Lakers are not only going to win this series, but then they'll be a tough out for the rest of the postseason. I'm still sticking with the Warriors. I didn't walk away from last night's performance saying, oh my goodness gracious, the Golden State Warriors can't win this series. They absolutely can. I still think they will. And you even saw it last night. The Lakers got as great of a performance that you could get from Anthony Davis, and still at the end of the game, the Warriors found a way to make it a game, and when they tied it up after going on that 14-0 run, you're lying to yourself, and you're lying to everyone else if you didn't think the Warriors were going to walk out of game one on their home court and actually steal a game one victory. I really thought they were going to snatch victory from the jaws of defeat in that game because they looked like it was going to be an easy Lakers win. And the next thing you know, out of nowhere, boom, 14-0 run. And it's unfortunate at the end of the game, Steph didn't get the shot. They made the right play getting the ball to Jordan Poole. Poole should be a little bit closer, but I can't crush him for taking that shot because what else was he supposed to do? And that's the thing. I think now we all see something. We rush to go have a reaction, to have a take. And in the moment when you're watching it, you're like, oh, Poole's so far away. Why? Steph Curry didn't get the shot. Oh, stupid incompetence. Go back and slowly watch the play. Because I did it right before we got on the air. I was in the newsroom with Hickey. I'm like, I know people are crushing Jordan Poole. Should he be closer to the three-point line? Absolutely. But if he didn't take the shot there, what else was he going to do? And Steph, I even put out the still shot on my Twitter, at Zach Gelb. Steph with 10.7 seconds left is still at the half-court line. He's still at the half-court line. So I don't have a problem with Poole trying to go hit that shot, especially when he was 6 of 10 in the game. 6 of 10. And unfortunately for Warriors fans, he finishes 6 of 11 after missing that three-point shot. Hickey, give me your reaction last night to the ending with Jordan Poole and then also the rest of this series. And if you're at all concerned about the Golden State Warriors as they dropped game one on their home court.
My reaction to the Poole shot is this. Elite defense on the Lakers. In absolute elite defense, they did everything possible, or I should say everything right in that situation. They got the ball out of Curry's hands. They said, as Stan Van Gundy said perfectly, anyone but Curry is going to try to tie this game. And if Jordan Poole hits that, great for him. We've seen him hit shots like that before in the playoffs. It's not crazy to, you know, to yell at him for taking that shot when, again, we've seen it plenty of times, him take a deep three and make it. So that was the perfect defense for the Lakers, where Curry was getting hot late, and they put themselves in the best position to succeed. I don't know what else, you know, if you are criticizing the shot, what you expect the Warriors to do.
Outside of getting closer.
But still, even though, okay, he takes a few dribbles, then you're just allowing the defense to close in on you at that point. He took an, it's deep, don't get me wrong, but he took an in-rhythm open three with a chance to tie the game. I'll live with that. I'll live with that, especially when you have Steph Curry getting double teamed and not having the greatest three-point shooter we've ever seen really have any sort of shot to actually legitimately get a shot off to tie the game. But I'm with you also. Great game one win by the Lakers. I picked the Warriors to win the series. I thought LA was going to win game one, especially with the short turnaround and all the emotions that the Warriors were facing after winning game seven on the road.
Sorry, Warriors fans.
But the thing is, Anthony Davis was great yesterday. That's why they won the game. Why I'm still sticking with the Warriors is I don't trust Anthony Davis to be at that elite level three more times. The Warriors have championship experience that willed them past the Kings in round number one. I think it's going to do the same here in round number two because they are consistent and mentally tough. Why just don't you just can't expect Anthony Davis, for how great he is, to play at that level three more times in the series.
But does championship experience really matter here? Like, LeBron's on the other side. He has a ton of championship experience, and Anthony Davis has won a championship before.
I think it does in the sense of fighting through mentally. LeBron is not in this category, but Anthony Davis, to me, is a guy that does not push through adversity a lot of times. He is someone who folds. The Warriors do not fold as a team collectively when adversity strikes them outside of LeBron
James. But he does
have
championship experience.
I don't trust anyone else to push through. I mean, he's won a championship, but is he mentally tough in the playoffs? No, he's not.
Well, because his body doesn't hold up.
And that's part of pushing through. He doesn't push through. That's why I don't trust Anthony Davis. That's why I don't trust the Lakers, because they cannot trust Anthony Davis to play the level he has for three more games.
I'm actually really rooting for Anthony Davis, because it's such a shame when your body can't hold up and you suffer all these injuries and then people clown you for the injuries and then say, like you are, that he's just not mentally tough to push through it. The guy's legitimately hurt.
Well, it's not. I know I'm not questioning the injuries, but it's also just the lack of consistency. Like, me and Sue were just joking before, he basically guaranteed Anthony Davis is going to have like 12 points, 7 rebounds and be a non-factor in game number two. That's what he does.
Possible.
The guy, it's not just the injuries or that he rolls an ankle is down for 20 minutes. It's the fact that he mentally checks out. He's not aggressive. And it's almost like, with how skilled he is, it's almost like, wow, it's almost like a surprise that Anthony Davis is asserting his dominance compared to when he's not. That's the issue.
By the way, you know who I thought had the most logical take after game one? And it's kind of ironic because this guy punched the guy that took the shot, Draymond Green. I want to play you this. This is Draymond Green on his podcast. And it's actually pretty cool. I know Draymond's done this before, but Draymond does the podcast immediately after the game. And I don't always love what Draymond Green has to say, but I love the way that Draymond Green defended Jordan Poole last night, courtesy of The Volume. Listen up.
Quite frankly, I like the shot. You know, you obviously, you know, you tell him to eat up the space and take three a little bit closer, as there was, you know, he could have eaten up the space, but Jordan can shoot the ball, and he got a good look at it. Yes, you want him to take a couple steps in and get an even closer three, but Jordan taking that three is not why we lost that game.
I like that. You know what, Hickey? That's the leadership that the Warriors try to tell you that Draymond Green shows. Like, don't get me wrong. This guy can act like a jackass a bunch of times. We saw what happened in the last series. We've seen what has happened before, right, up against LeBron in the finals. But that may be, from a leadership standpoint, one of the best moments from Draymond Green. And this is, it's talking about a guy that he punched in the face earlier in the year. I do respect the answer. I don't always respect the things Draymond Green does, clearly, but that moment, that isolated moment, I have some respect for Draymond Green after that.
I know he didn't say it, but in a way, he's almost tipping his cap to the Lakers of just like the thing me and you were talking about in Draymond Green without saying it, hinted at it. It's like, what else do you want them to do? Like, Klay Thompson is not sitting there wide open in the corner. It's Jordan Poole taking the shot, or basically a timeout. And it's like, he took the shot. Okay, you live with it. It's Steph Curry said in the postgame, it's a make-or-miss league. And that's truly what it is. You make the shot, he's a hero. Wow, what a shot. Jordan Poole's a hero. After game one, you go to overtime. I would say at that point, you probably win the game. He missed it. He's the villain. You're an idiot. Why would you take that shot?
Also, I'll say this, and I think this could be a slugfest. I believe this is going seven. I think we're going to see great games in this series, like what we saw last night. And you look at two players for the Warriors. Like, we talk about the key for the Lakers. It's Anthony Davis giving dominant performances. I got to see more from Wiggins. And then also, Jordan Poole, even though he played well last night, I got to see more consistency from Jordan Poole. Because last year, we were talking about Jordan Poole being that third splash brother. And so far this year, Jordan Poole has regressed in a big-time way in the playoffs. Like, I have to see Jordan Poole and Wiggins are big X factors in this series if the Warriors are going to find a way to prevail up against the Los Angeles Lakers. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We will take a break. When we come on back, the Knicks even up the series against the Miami Heat. But can either of these teams find a way to take down the winner of the Boston Celtics series up against the Philadelphia 76ers? We'll discuss on the other side, as you do have game two in that series coming up later tonight. It is the Zach Gelb Show right here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
It is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. In the first segment, when we were talking about the Lakers and Warriors, I was saying for the Lakers, their best player is LeBron, but their most valuable player is Anthony Davis. You look at a team like the Nuggets, their best player is Nikola Jokic. Their most valuable player is Jamal Murray. For the Sixers, I'm talking about to win a championship or to go as far as you can, their best player is Joel Embiid. Their most valuable player is James Harden. Hickey, you're a Knicks fan. I don't know if you'll agree with this, but I'm going to say, and this is the obvious part, their best player is Jalen Brunson. Their most valuable player, though, to win this series up against the Heat is Julius Randle. And you saw game one, you didn't have him. Game two, you do. And not that, you know, Julius Randle is the only reason why they won the game, but he was able to give you 25 points and 12 rebounds. Julius Randle has been someone in New York that it's weird. Like, he wanted to be here. He's someone that it's very up and down. It's very turbulent. It's like one week, Julius Randle, wow, he helped save the Knicks. The next week, he doesn't want to be here. Get him out of town. So it's a very up and down ride for Julius Randle. And it's a crazy seesaw ride. But he is very important to the success of this team. And I don't think Julius Randle on a championship team is a one or a two. I think he is a three. And the Knicks aren't built to win a championship right now. But it was very important this year for the Knicks to get into the playoffs, because right? They make the playoffs 2 years ago, then they miss the playoffs. You know that they're very close to just James Dolan just swooping in, and that could happen any moment. The fact that they made the playoffs and won a series, that is going to buy this regime more time. And I don't think anyone thought Leon Rose was on the chopping block, but the way that he didn't get Donovan Mitchell, if they didn't make the playoffs this year, you're going to sense a lot of people starting to turn. And for the Knicks, I don't think it's reasonable right now to say that they're anywhere close to winning a championship, even though they're in the second round. But it's important to have continuity because it does seem like a regime comes in and they just fail in New York, or a regime comes in, has a little bit of success, and then quickly it's back down to failure, and then there's a regime change. You need some consistency, and you need to consistently make the playoffs, and they've done that now 2 out of the last 3 years, so that if you make it the year after that, then from there you're eventually going to have to add another player to bring you closer to winning a championship. But when Jalen Brunson is your best player, and I love Jalen Brunson, but in the NBA, he can't be your best player if you're looking to win a championship. So where do you stand on that one, Hickey?
Well, when it comes to Randle being valuable, yes. Like, they need him to play well because he's one of those guys I will equate a little bit to Carmelo Anthony in the sense that he is primarily a scorer. He's not going to bring defense. He's not going to bring facilitating or rebounding. His main goal on a given night is scoring. And when he's hot, he's hot. He's hitting shots everywhere. He could score 30 in his sleep. He is a guy that absolutely can, dominate a game. But also in the similar sense, especially in the playoffs, we've seen from Julius Randle, when he's off, when he's not making shots,
brings the whole team down.
He's a massive liability.
Yeah.
He's going to keep on shooting. He's a black hole. And at times his attitude gets to the point where he's sulking, and that leads to him performing bad. It kind of brings bad energy to the rest of the team. We saw him in game number 4 against the Cavaliers get benched in the fourth quarter. They just didn't play him at all. He's a guy that, yes, if the Knicks want to go far and get past the Heat in this round, and let's just start right there with getting past the Heat in round number 2, you need Julius Randle to be scoring 25 a night like he did in game number 2.
And if I'm a Heat fan, to be honest, I'm feeling pretty confident after the first 2 games. You get game 1, and then in game number 2 you lose, but you didn't have Jimmy Butler. Assuming, and this is the big assumption, that Jimmy Butler's actually going to be okay with that ankle injury, and it's ridiculous, by the way. Game 2, last night, Tuesday. We don't see game 3 until Saturday. People wonder, and like me, we bitch and complain, why this takes so long, the NBA postseason. Well, it's because you play a game on Tuesday, and then you don't see the next game until Saturday. So assuming that Jimmy Butler is going to be okay, and these extra days will actually help him, I fully anticipate the Heat to win that series, because it wasn't like the Knicks last night were drastically better, and we saw a team in the Miami Heat, Hickey, not have their best player and their most valuable player in Jimmy Butler.
I picked the Knicks in 7 to win this series. I'm going to stick with that pick. But
you'll be wrong.
I feel worse about this team after yesterday's win than I did after the game 1 loss, just because, like I said, no Jimmy Butler, and it's still, I know Randle's banged up and Jalen Brunson's banged up, but the fact that you couldn't put this team away and Caleb Martin's hitting shots and Max Strus is hitting shots consistently, it's just you have to have a better performance at home without the main piece on the court. You have to take care of business better and easier. And the Knicks offense for a large part of that game yesterday was ugly.
Why are there so many days off in between here?
I honestly have no idea.
If you would have told me
no
Tuesday
clue.
To Friday, okay, I would understand that. And even then I would think it's ridiculous. But Tuesday to Saturday?
My only guess is the fact that the Knicks and Heat are ahead of almost everyone else. Whereas you're looking at the Lakers-Warriors, I believe it's every other day in the entire series. I know the Celtics and Sixers, at least the first 3 games are every other day, Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Nuggets and Suns, though, already 2-0.
And their next game is not till Friday. So they
Which
have
is a joke.
Decent gap as well. I'm not sure if that's just, hey, we're going to start it early and, you had Knicks Heat the same day as Game 7 of Warriors Kings. I don't know. I'm just saying try to get everything on a schedule to where you have the Eastern Conference Finals and Western Conference Finals happening at the same time with teams not having a massive advantage in rest like a week compared to another team. I have no idea.
This is so stupid, though. And I'm not yelling at you. I know you're in agreement here. They played last night. They don't play Game 3 until Saturday. It's just the definition of insanity and stupidity.
What
really
I don't get is if you were dead set on, okay, Game 1's going to be Sunday in New York like it was, and Game 3 is going to be on Saturday in Miami, then put Game 2 maybe not on Monday night. Or Tuesday night, excuse me. Tuesday night.
Like on Wednesday?
Wednesday. Now, again, not that it's making it that much better, but it's like you go from one day off to three. Like, that's also going to, I think, impact the rhythm of players and how you go. It just doesn't make any sense.
Let me ask you this. If the Knicks win this series, do you think they could beat either Philadelphia or the Celtics?
I think they have a chance. I wouldn't pick them in the series, but so far,
so nothing
I've seen from the Celtics or Sixers tells me it's impossible. I'd pick them over the Knicks for sure, but I think there's absolutely a path for the Knicks to go to the finals.
Even though this has been a fun Knicks team, I think there's a 0% chance if the Knicks get to the conference finals that they're going to beat either Philly and or Boston, assuming everyone's healthy. Like, if Embiid has a leg injury, then it totally changes it.
Well, that's the thing. You think in a week and a half he'll be better? Like, fully, 80%
playing
fully
tonight?
To go? Right, well, I mean, we'll see how he looks.
We'll have to wait and see, but I'm assuming if the injury is not a factor, then I'm going to take the Sixers to win that series. And even if Embiid was hurt and had to miss a few games, I still think the Sixers would win that series. And the same thing for Boston. I think Boston against the Knicks would beat them in a 7-game series as well. The Heat, if I'm a Celtics fan, I want the Knicks to win this series. If I am a Sixers fan, I want the Knicks to win this series. It's not that I'm telling you I would pick the Heat to beat either Philadelphia or to beat the Boston Celtics, but you just don't want to play Jimmy Butler. Like, Jimmy Butler is just an absolute killer, and you know there'd be motivation up against the Sixers. You look at the Boston Celtics, that would be a pain-in-the-ass matchup if you have to go up against the Heat. Both the Sixers and Celtics should be able to beat the Heat in a 7-game series, but I wouldn't say that the Heat have no shot to do so. If I'm Boston, if I'm the Sixers, I'd much rather see the Knicks than the Miami Heat. And I do think ultimately the Heat will win the series, and that could set up for a somewhat fun Eastern Conference final, depending on who's going to win this series between the Celtics and the Sixers.
These days, having versatile clothing you can wear anywhere is a must. That's why American Giant makes clothing that fits into your life and is made to last. Plus, with an impressive selection of staples to choose from, there's something for everyone. And it's all made right here in the USA. Find your new wardrobe staples at American-Giant.com and get 20% off your order when you use code WA23 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com. Promo code WA23.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
We'll talk about the return of Joel Embiid in just a second. But, Hickey, taking one last look at the 2023 first round of the NFL draft, as we've basically had a week to sit on it, I just want to have us both make three selections of our favorite picks in this draft. It doesn't mean that, like, this is going to be the best player. It's just where they went, the fit. If someone fell that you thought the value was great, you could use this as any interpretation as you want. Like, if you want to say, hey, it's Bryce Young because you think the Panthers got a transcendent quarterback, you're absolutely able to do this. So give me your first player when you look at this that you're just like, wow, I think that team or that player is going to have a monster year.
Let's start with the man you just said, Bryce Young. You kept it simple, stupid. You traded up to number one. You could have fell in love with C.J. Stroud and his size fitting Frank Reich's profile. You could have fell in love with the upside of Anthony Richardson and what that could lead to. You got the best quarterback in the draft. You didn't overthink it. You kept it simple. And you got a guy that I'm very high on in Bryce Young. That's for me number one.
You like Bryce Young?
Can't tell, right?
I didn't know.
Hard to tell.
I often confuse you with that guy that was running around the studio for 2 months begging his football team to trade up to the number one overall pick. What was it? Pay the price. Let's go get Bryce.
I'll tell you this. If they got him, I'll be wearing a number 9 Colts blue jersey every day for probably at least a few years.
Oh, you would have been insufferable.
So that already would have been ordered, already would have been here.
Actually,
I would have been ready to go.
Part of me kind of now and looking back on it, would have loved if you would have got Bryce Young. And I don't think he'll be a bust, but then it would have been really fun if he turned out to be a bust, just with how much of a stink and how much of a push you were making for the Colts to go get Bryce Young.
He's a great guy. Why are we rooting against him?
No, I'm rooting against you.
But you are rooting against Bryce. If you're listening somewhere, I got your back. Don't worry.
Well, now you don't have his back anymore. You don't really care what happens with Bryce Young now.
I mean, that's true, but I'm not rooting against him.
Are you going to get an Anthony Richardson jersey?
We'll see.
Talk
to me
no.
in 3 years. Oh, I'll get one if he's great. Absolutely.
We'll see. Talk to me in 3 years.
I only have three jerseys.
Quinton Nelson, which I got you.
Yes, that you gifted me, which is
Russell
great.
Wilson, which I got you.
No, I'm not
Matt
counting
Ryan,
that.
28-3 jersey, which
not
I got
counting
you.
That either.
Oh, okay. You're just talking Colts jersey? Let me guess.
Just Colts jerseys.
Peyton Manning.
Peyton Manning.
You have Quinton Nelson.
Quinton Nelson.
And then
four-time
the last one, Dwight Freeney?
No.
Bob Sanders?
No.
Marvin Harrison?
No.
Reggie Wayne?
No.
Another Colts
like this
jersey.
This is easy.
Edgerrin James?
No.
All right, who is it? Oh, Andrew Luck.
Andrew Luck. Manning.
You almost forgot that
Luck
he played.
Nelson. And hopefully I'll get a number 5 Anthony Richardson jersey in, I'll say, 2 years.
You're kind of like the coach or the GM that says, yeah, well, that player's not getting traded. I could guarantee you by week one you'll have an Anthony Richardson jersey.
No. With jerseys, I am very, not selective, but I usually go one at a time. I don't really have a lot. Like, I don't have a lot of Mets jerseys. I have right now one that I can only wear. I have one really Colts jersey that I can only wear right now in Quinton Nelson, although I will, you know, if we need a retro throwback, go Peyton or Andrew Luck. Like, I'm not a big jersey guy in the sense. I have one Rangers jersey. Like, I don't have 5 jerseys of every team I root for. One Penn State jersey. I'm just a one time at a time kind of guy.
But I will say, in your wardrobe, at least here, I would say out of the 5 days of the week that I see you, 2 days out of that week you're in some sort of sports apparel, and then the other 3 days you think you're like a GQ model.
Well, that's right. Yes, I would agree with that. Thank you.
You're welcome. My first one, I think this is going to surprise some people, because I'm going all the way to the 21st pick in the draft. It's Quinnen Johnston. I love this fit for Los Angeles Chargers. You have an offense that, yes, Mike Williams, big receiver. Keenan Allen, wonderful wide receiver. He's like that one guy in football everyone goes, oh, he's one of the more underrated players in the league. That means he's no longer underrated. That means everyone realizes his importance. Their problems, though, is that we have not been able to see Keenan Allen and Mike Williams stay on the field enough. So I like that move, going and getting another wide receiver, and he's going to get a ton of targets. He's quick. He's big. I believe Quinnen Johnston was one of those wide receivers who, before the draft process, it felt like he was going to be the first wide receiver off the board, and he ended up going to be the second wide receiver off the board, but he didn't get an invite into the green room. That meant that the NFL thought that there was a chance that he was going to pull a Will Levis and he was going to fall out of the first round. So I really like Quinnen Johnston. I think he's going to be a stud. And I think the situation with the Chargers, with Herbert, and you have two other wide receivers, will not only get him a ton of targets, but he may be more relied upon than what they think they're going to need out of him because of the injuries that the other two guys usually do suffer.
That's my only concern, is he was banged up a lot at TCU, and he's a really good receiver, big body guy, and now you're going
fits
to
the Chargers mold a
wide
little bit
receiver room that their biggest issue, like you just highlighted, is their lack of health.
Who's your next pick?
I will go with a guy your team took. I hate to give the Patriots credit. But Christian Gonzalez out
great
of
value.
Oregon, tremendous corner, fell right into their lap. And not to mention, because I will give the Patriots credit here as well, you trade down and still land him, so you land extra draft capital from the Steelers.
And screw the Jets.
Screw the Jets.
It was only a fourth-round pick, I think.
Get still, it's extra draft capital. Yeah. Look, you know, see what you get.
Nerds like
and
you
also
like
you
that.
Get, you know, wait, who knows? You take a guy in the hall, Tom Brady's a sixth-rounder. What if they didn't have that sixth-round pick? I'm just saying, you know,
one in a million.
You do hit on later round picks, and that's where good GMs truly do make their money. But really good corner, you get him at good value, And you get, a really good fit now. And when you see a lot of corners have a lot of success in that New England secondary, especially.
I will go back to the wide receiving well. Jackson Smith and Jigba, who is my favorite wide receiver in this draft. And I said the same thing about Olave last year. A few years ago, I said the same thing about Justin Jefferson. Ja'Marr Chase was an easy and obvious one. But Jackson Smith and Jigba going to Seattle, just like the Chargers, you have a good wide receiving room with DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett getting a little bit older now, Geno Smith just having a good year last year. We'll see how much regression there's going to be. I thought value-wise and add a little extra oomph to the offense, it was a good move by Seattle. And then also Seattle, not that I'm using this as a pick, but they have Kenneth Walker in that backfield and they add Zach Charbonnet. You got a ton of weapons in Seattle. Like if Geno's not the guy, Seattle becomes a very attractive destination. Not only do you have an organization a lot of people respect, but at least on the offensive side of the ball, if I'm a quarterback and let's say Geno just flops this year, I know they still have two more years on that contract. I look at that as a destination where it's okay, I could go win there if you're a very good quarterback in this league with all the potential weapons around there.
They have, it's funny, Pete Carroll kind of prioritizing the offense, but he has done a really good job, like I said, putting weapons around and making Seattle a place that maybe, you know, I don't know who the next exactly.
Someone
you know, want to
cook there,
signs.
I'll tell you that. Someone would want to cook there.
Oh. Some more than others.
That one kitchen, went right over Hickey's head.
That
at
kitchen
first.
Works works better for some chefs more than others, that's for sure.
All right, give me your next one.
Last one is not sexy, but that's why I like it a lot. It's the Cowboys taking Mazi Smith.
Really?
Now, to Jerry's credit, he has had more boring drafts recently. And I think, especially with what you need, it's easy to kind of look at some of the flash later on in the draft. And I think the Cowboys did the right thing in getting interior defensive line help. They do need to, you know, kind of shore up that defensive line. I like the fact that it's not sexy. It's not exactly the pick Jerry Jones would make, but it's the right pick.
Do you have that audio, by the way, inside the war room? Just wondering, with the Dallas Cowboys, I saw that they released that. It was fascinating stuff where they literally, when they were on the clock with like 2 minutes left, they put out the video, they put out the audio of the Dallas Cowboys discussing who they were going to pick and how they got to Mazi. Here is the audio from the Dallas Cowboys team website.
You got 2 minutes.
We're just getting warmed up.
Well, who would you take?
Personally, I would go with Mazi because I know that he helps us now with the guard. I love the guard, too. My question is, you're adding something to it where we have depth. I think the defensive lineman gives you an immediate starter and something for the future.
Here, I am cutthroat if we missed one of those two guys after having them both here in our hands.
Yeah, we're better on the line of scrimmage with either one of these guys.
We've had offensive linemen there. We've had the opportunity to pick them. We've not had a defensive lineman, interior defensive lineman, that high in quite some time.
We're good.
Let's
get him on the phone.
I think that's pretty neat. Now, they don't tell you who the guard is, but the fact that they show you kind of in a truncated way the decision-making process, Hickey, I like when teams release that content. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm a sucker for the draft day phone calls, and that's pretty cool, but that's not really behind the scenes because everyone's getting filmed there. You know that it's going to get put out. You know how selective and protective teams are. The fact that they basically, even though there's some edits there, they take you inside the war room, that's neat. That's awesome.
They kind of show you in a way how the sausage is made, right? Okay, you're on the clock now. Sometimes, I mean, at least, I don't know about you, I felt this way on Thursday night with some teams. You're sitting there, it goes, what the hell are they doing? Like, what are they waiting for? Let's get the pick in and let's go. And I know some picks are more deliberated and talked about than others, but that was cool to kind of see a little bit of a debate. You know, very cordial, not too spirited, but it's a nice kind of insight to see what really happens in a war room.
And my last first round pick that I absolutely love, Jalen Carter, going to the Eagles. Now, I know there's off the field concerns. You put him in a locker room where he's very close to the Kobe Dean, Jordan Davis as well. You have Nolan Smith now, DeAndre Swift, Georgia guys in that locker room, but also you have veteran leadership in there that don't really know him. Guys like, for example, Brandon Graham and Fletcher Cox. Now Hassan Reddick probably taking on more of a leadership role in year number two with the Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles are in such a great spot, and even though there's character concerns, you have someone in Jalen Carter that could be a stud and could be one of the better players in the draft. You got him at 9. I love that pick and also the environment that he's going into. real quickly, I have to actually say you were right on something. I have to give you credit. I have changed my opinion yesterday. Not that we went back and forth at this, but I thought that the Sixers should sit Joel Embiid. And they won game one, sit him for game two, get him rested, and then boom, you have him for game three, and you get some extra rest, already taking care of business. I was talking to a buddy of mine who's a Sixers fan today, and he said, we've been stuck in the second round for half a decade. First time winning game one, you got a chance to go for their throats tonight. He's going to be hurt regardless of when he plays, so bleep it. Go for the kill shot tonight. And when my buddy Dan said that, because I just asked him, I go, do you like Embiid playing tonight? And he sent that response. I go, okay. I could rock with Hickey. I could rock with Sixer Nation. I could rock with the idea of playing Joel Embiid, even though I was against it. Now, take out a pen, Hickey, and write something down. Because you would be stubborn. You would be dragging your feet, stomping those big feet of yours, and be like, I'm not changing my opinion until I'm proven to be wrong. I changed my opinion. So can you. Thank you very much. There's my PSA for the day. Jared Greenberg will join us next.
Most of us have clothes that we've loved for years, maybe even decades. But it's harder than ever to find clothes that will stand the test of time. If you're looking for more pieces designed to last, you can't go wrong with American Giant. From hoodies and t-shirts to denim and more, they've got everything you need to build a wardrobe that you'll be proud of for years to come. All American Giant clothing is created with a commitment to doing things better. From the materials they use, down to the last stitch in every piece. And everything is made right here in America, in partnership with people and communities. Because keeping things local ensures the kind of quality you'll appreciate as soon as you receive your order. Discover the American Giant difference today. Shop wardrobe essentials that last a lifetime at American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code LT23 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, promo code LT23.